A very warm welcome to this World Game Changers podcast, where your host, Paul D. Lowe, embraces many crucial conversations that compassionately contribute towards creating a better life and world. Paul's intention is very simple, to help get people's inspirational insights and motivational messages out into the world so others may benefit.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to this World Game Changers podcast episode, where I'm absolutely delighted to introduce a returning guest, Nicola Bellal from the East Coast of the USA, where we will be, this is our fourth one now in the mini-series of Challenging Conventional Thinking. Nicola, warm welcome, Mom.
Thank you, Paul. I'm getting used to the mom welcome, and I'm just honored to be invited back for a fourth time in this series.
And I know we've already touched upon this, but it's a real deep, curious thing for me. So this title, this courtesy, that certainly from my point of view, when I label an American lady mom, and it's only an American lady I do it to, by the way, irrespective of age. But is there, you know, on the note of, you know, unconventional or conventional thinking, is there a convention that title mom is only addressed to a certain age group of lady in the States?
In the States, certainly. I think I'm a bit of a unique case because I identify as an old soul to begin with, and I'm really looking forward to the sage phase of my life, to the wise elder phase where I get to grow out my long gray hair and play the role of elder in some community. So I suppose it doesn't offend me. I don't experience ageism towards myself or the fear of becoming wise is sort of how I think about aging, or choose to think about it anyway. Sometimes it's a little scary.
Yeah. So is there from your perception then, is there a kind of a cutoff point, you know, is it appropriate, generally speaking, for ladies over a certain age? I don't know, pluck a figure out the air, 50? Or does it kind of not work that way? Is it so much of an individual thing that it's just received, or not, as the case may be, on an individual basis?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. As you say that, my gut instinct is that it probably is quite individual, whether it's received as a term of respect or endearing respect versus forcing someone to look at their own age, right? And inviting them to have feelings about that could be positive or negative. So I do think it's quite individual, actually.
Mm. Okay, well, I can stress, listeners, that it's certainly the former category of what Nicole mentioned there, rather than the latter. Definitely not the latter, because I wouldn't force any label on anyone. But anyway, a bit of light-hearted banter there to get proceedings under the way. Where are we going to take this today, Nicole? Where are we going to take this unconventional thinking, challenging conventional thinking?
Well, Paul, I've been doing a lot of reflection in between our conversations, because each time we speak, there is this invitation to go deeper into my own inner workings, my own programming, whether that is societal or actually the reprogramming that I have consciously chosen to do within myself around conventionalism versus non-conventionalism. And one thing I've uncovered since the last time we spoke is that I do have a bit of a bias towards non-conventionalism and seeing that as advanced or edges that are going to help me grow and expand. And so there are some cases where it's whether or not the non-conventional way is true for me, I'm at least going to try it on because I see my millennial peers and I see Gen Z and my younger brother, who is wiser than me in so many ways. I often say he is my older, wiser, younger brother because he has paved the way and gone first in many ways, especially in unconventional ways. And so I have this perception that unconventional is or equals advanced, and therefore I quote unquote should try it on at the very least and push myself into the boundaries of trying on new things to help myself step into new ways of doing things or a new paradigm of really anything, whether it's business, relationship, money, community, family. I'm very interested in uncovering the new paradigm of doing any of these things and creating a new set of rules. But it does come at a detriment sometimes. It does come in the form of not self-harm, but perhaps pushing myself beyond what is actually true for me. And I think there actually has been a little bit of traumatizing myself in some of the edgier explorations of non-conventionalism. So this has been a big insight since we last sat down together.
Fascinating. So what came through there, rightly or wrongly, and yet again, I'm going to flirt devil's advocate here with one of your fellow countrymen, Jimmy Dean, rebel with a cause or rebel without a cause? Because this rebellion, isn't there, against the status quo that's playing out here. So I just ask the question, Nicole, from your awareness, is that, you know, do you look on it within that sort of, under that umbrella of rebellion, or, you know, conscious of that, or not, as the case may be? And then if you do, is there a cause, or is it just rebellion for the sake of rebellion? So a real kind of mixed bag there.
It's a fair question. I actually think that question could be an incredible litmus test when these impulses to do the unconventional thing or to go against or question the status quo, when that comes up, to actually take the moment to pause and ask why am I doing this? I think that could be a huge benefit, because most of the time, I would say for me personally, most of the time, I am rebelling and moving away from the status quo because I see something that is broken in many of the systems that we're living by right now, and in many of the cultural rules or patterns that we've been operating from. And so my intentions are good. Like the drive that comes in from my heart is pulling me towards what feels like the possibility for more love, the possibility for more ease, more connection, more abundance, like especially when I think about monetary systems or the ways that we're collaborating in business, like moving away from selfish individualism or ego and into something that is more generous, more reciprocal. Like those types of paradigm shifts come from a very genuine core desire to create positive change and to be willing to be a brave pioneer that goes first, even if that's not the easy path, even if that's quite hard at times. I'm willing to take the leap. I'm sort of designed or wired for that for whatever reason. But there are times when, if I were to use that question as a litmus test, I do think my answer would be, I am rebelling for rebellion's sake here. I'm rebelling because I see others around me rebelling against this. I'm maybe curious. I am wanting to perhaps be perceived as someone who is, what would the word be? Not advanced, but at like just, I guess, different. This came up before, right? I do have this drive towards being different and doing the thing that kind of causes me to stand out. And I do think that to some extent can come from ego. So it's something to be aware of. I think this is a good litmus test question, and to pause and ask why.
The seven levels of why. There's a train of thought, isn't there, that if you have a scenario and you can get to seven levels, and by the way, I've never actually got to seven levels in justifying, and I use that word loosely. But what's kind of playing out for listening to you speak there is this whole, this sense of identity, this real, real deep sense of identity of who you are. And I say that very, very respectfully, rather than even a smidgen of judgment around that, There isn't. In fact, it's said with the utmost respect, because I think as individuals, as humans, when we go on that and have the courage to go on that voyage of self-inquiry, of self-discovery, it can be a very, very lonely, scary place. You know, and I speak as one that spent decades in that space, swimming against the tide, you know, defying convention, you know, and I really have, you know, and that's why I asked the question around, you know, rebel with or without a cause, because when I look back on my own experience, which had been many, diverse, deep, weird and wonderful, I don't think I've still answered that question about myself yet. You know, was I doing it? Well, actually, I can to some degree, a large degree, answer that question, but not totally unequivocally. And I say that in the light of the model that I've propounded, you know, many times before, as listeners know. Robbins' six human needs model is fantastic. And I know that a lot of the stuff that I did, Nicole, you know, swimming against the tide, was that third need, the need for significance. I wanted to be seen to be different, because my life from an early age inadvertently was so shook up and so chaotic. It's all I kind of, you know, my only certainty was my total uncertainty. So for me, I felt that I needed to cling to something that I could relate to. And the only thing I could relate to was chaos and uncertainty. And so that gave me significance to say, look at me. You know, if you've got a black cat, mine's blacker. And if yours is blacker, then I've got two black cats. Anything you can do, I can do better. It was literally, I was conscious in that space, which drove me on, you know, to achieve a lot. It really did. But as you've quite rightly, Nicole, alluded to within your many shares here, at what price, though? At what price? And one might say that, you know, after, you know, decades of diverse experiences, there's certainly a lot of lessons learnt and wisdom gained. But what price? So I kind of just throw that back in your direction for any thoughts you may have.
Yeah, this is a big one, because regardless of where that impulse comes from, if it's rebel with a cause or rebel with a purpose or not, it's no matter what, when we are pushing the edges, we're gonna go through probably some dark night of the soul or some version of ego death or the death of a past self as we learn these lessons. And some of them can be incredibly challenging. And I think about, you know, one question I kind of hold in all of this too is, are there different phases of life or different chapters of life when we are more equipped, more curious, more resilient when it comes to going into the shadows and going into the edges and being the disruptors, even if it's the disruptors for ourselves or for our own programming or constructs? Because I think about the waves of each generation that kind of come through, and it's almost like each new generation is a disruptor in the face of the status quo and wants to push the boundaries, test things. I mean, we see this even in young children in the earliest stages of development. And I've definitely witnessed this within myself in sort of the chapter of my life that was late teenage years all the way through 20s. And I feel like maybe early 30s is when I started to settle into a level of comfort around the uncertainty, around the, you know, I knowing that I can push the boundaries, I can go into the edges, but I'm going to be choosier this time about the edges I go into and why. And I'm going to make damn sure that they're true for me to the best of my ability. I don't always get that perfect or right. I still make mistakes. I still learn and kind of get too far in one direction. I'm like, ooh, actually, I'm not doing that for the right reasons, or I'm not ready for that yet. Let me backtrack a little bit. That was a bit of a detour. So I think about the price that we pay for testing these boundaries and questioning the status quo. And I feel like the cost for me was less in some ways in my 20s because I could handle what was coming back. Like I was just so, I had so much energy. I was bursting at the seams. I was ready to bust through any door and, you know, be the one in the crowd raising my hand and saying, well, wait a minute, guys, can we fundamentally question this? Are we sure that this is the game we want to play, or these are the rules we want to live by? Mm. And I had a lot of energy for that. I had a lot of aliveness for that. I find myself now kind of not sitting back, not opting out of pushing the edges or the deep self-exploration, but slowing down a little bit and now looking to Gen Z and sort of admiring them and saying, wow, they're pushing edges that I never even dreamed of pushing. And I am learning so much from the disruption that generation is inviting into our collective field, that at this time when I have a little bit less energy and kind of, you know, want to focus on the ways that I know how to be a disruptor and how to be an agent of change or a legacy lever, it's like I'm comfortable with that. And I'm sort of rooting them on as the generation that has the bursting at the seams energy to be the disruption. And I feel, yeah, like my sense of responsibility around that has shifted a little bit, perhaps. There's more of a cost to me now to push myself so far that it hurts. It's like, it takes me a while to come back from that now. I don't bounce back as quickly as I used to.
Mm. Yes, I think we can all relate to that one as a general comment. So a couple of things there. Firstly, what my reaction to that was when, you know, this phase that we go through each generation, it took my mind back to the 70s, 1970s, when I was a teenager growing up, and punk rock burst on the scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was radical. I mean, it was extreme. It was, you know, people were dyeing their hair with Mohicans and wearing pins through the nose. I mean, it had really kind of, you know, and even by my standards, and as I said, kind of, you know, I grew up on the streets, more or less anything went, survival. But I can remember seeing these images of, you know, like Johnny Rotten and the Sex Pistols and, you know, Sid Vicious and the like, and many more, and even the more moderate Jam. You know, that kind of this new wave of music, it's like, wow. You know, and these safety pins and everything. It was like, what is happening here? So that was that kind of, you know, triggered a memory, a nostalgic memory of music. And as we know, Nicole, you know, as we've spoke about, music is a passion. And maybe we can go into that thread of conventionality around music in a moment or two. But the other thing I want to mention that you mentioned is ego death. You mentioned ego death. And I put this to you, that through our various experiences, does the ego ever, ever really die?
This is a good question. Every time I think that it does, it comes back in a different form. It might become more conscious and more gentle over time. At least that's been my experience. It runs the show less and less. Fear runs the show less and less. And I am able to have a more loving relationship with ego each time it lets go, where I can now, in the face of fear or in the face of a survival instinct showing up, I can now say, okay, I see you. Thank you. I see that you're trying to protect me. Thank you. And we actually are safe to do this thing. We actually are safe to do the hard thing or the courageous thing. And then kind of working with that survival part of myself or my brain to gracefully move through change or evolution. And so my relationship with my ego has become more loving. And then I think through that, it becomes less loud, which has been nice because there's less noise. But to your question, it's not like it's not still there, and it does serve a very important function. It has a purpose in my life, and I am grateful for it in the moments when it's trying to protect me.
Yeah, yeah. I think my own take upon it about the ego, and I kind of oftentimes detach and observe, You know, how am I playing out now? What am I saying? Why am I doing this? It's that sort of that detachment that enables us to witness ourselves, even in the moment. You know, and I'm practicing that now as we're speaking, Nicole, because I've mentioned it and it's triggered it within me. And I mean, triggered in it in a beautiful way. I'm actually, okay, Paul, so what are you saying? Some might say it's a measured communication process. It's actually deeper than that because I feel so detached from it. There's no emotion. There's no nothing. I'm just literally speaking words that are deemed appropriate in this energetic dance that's prevailing, this thread of conversation at this moment in time, which could change in a second, as we know. And usually on our conversation, usually changes in a nanosecond.
So, it's true.
But you know, for me, the ego doesn't die because it's very much maligned, isn't it? It gets bad press, the ego does.
It does.
Yeah, it gets bad press. And I quote something, and I've quoted it many times before, that, you know, maybe the art of, and I use this term very loosely, successful living, is to learn to catch the ego when it doesn't serve us. You know, it never goes away, but we learn to catch it quicker when it's non-serving. And that self-observation is really the key, isn't it? You know, do I need to detach into a place of solitude and deep reflection and some might say meditation? Or am I kind of surrounded by busyness and chaos and, you know, and noise? Because I'm in the middle of, I don't know, whatever it is, I'm in a business meeting and people are wanting to be heard and they want to hear what I've got to say, etc., etc. So noise prevails. So, but there's this constant dance, isn't there, of in, out, in, out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love what you said about the role that self-awareness plays in this too, and the ability to observe or witness that. Because, you know, I think back to how I was operating in, you know, maybe pre-18 years old or pre-20 years old, where a lot of the responses or reactions that I was having, I was very rarely pausing to think about them first. I was kind of going on feelings and impulse rather than questioning why and then making a conscious choice. And yeah, I think the step of self-awareness and observing that invites us into this self-responsibility, right? Where I can then choose, I have the ability to choose, how am I going to respond to this? And I love that ability, quite frankly, to notice where, you know, which brain I'm in, or which state or which vibration I'm in, and then respond accordingly, respond consciously with choice. And my, you know, my life, to your point, is far less chaotic because of this, because I'm not unintentionally or unconsciously kicking all this noise up or kicking up, you know, the reactivity that then cycles back to me from my unconscious reactions. I'm in a different dance, and it's maybe a little slower pace at times because it does take a moment to pause and to witness, but I'm definitely enjoying moving through life more with this self-awareness and self-response ability.
Yeah. So let's come back to music then, because I mean, you know, there is, I think it's fair to say there's an age gap between you and I, Nicole. Not that that's got any relevance at all, other than in the context of music, and maybe culturally, because, you know, you're an American lady and I'm a British stroke European guy, that, you know, there's a cultural, a strong sort of diverse cultural influence on those two factors. Although I do actually like a hell of a lot of the, you know, I was kind of weaned on the Johnny Cashes, the Elvis Presley ballads, you know, the Jim Reeves, the real very, very strong American culture. You know, when I sing songs now, invariably they are from that sort of very, very strong American background, very strong. So from your own point of view, I mean, what kind of, because music's vibration, isn't it? We've already used that word a few times. You know, music is energy, music is communication, it's message. All the things that we do in everyday life without even thinking about it, but maybe without a tune. Or maybe we do communicate with tunes. I certainly do. It's not unusual, as listeners will testify, for me to break out in song. And maybe that's sometime in the future, maybe the next episode, Nicole, where we do a duet. There's something for you to think about that's unconventional. But anyway, part that thought. So I kind of just say, you know, share with us, if you will, your kind of penchant for, you know, music and how it's influenced your life, or not, as the case may be, and how you feel that that's changed from, say, when you was a young girl to, you know, the woman that you are now.
Wow. Yeah, I love the invitation into this question. And I will say, Paul, I think first and foremost, we probably are in a duet already through these conversations, because I think the words that we're speaking are sort of a song and generating a vibration and a frequency as well, or an energetic signature that, you know, that listeners can almost soak in the same way that they would soak in the artistry of a song. And so I think we're already doing it. And when it comes to music, I mean, just to think back of the evolution of music through my own life and how that's shaped me, it absolutely has. And I think that because music is vibration and is frequency, there is a sort of a song that each generation sings or is invited into. And when I think about energetics or epigenetics, even, I think about how we as human beings were so creative, and we're such artists of love and connection and energy, and we get to cultivate the environment or the context that we're in. We're doing this all the time in how we build cities, in how we do community, in how we build businesses around us. Like, every context we create invites us into something else. It evolves us into something. And so we are both the creator and that is growing into context, and the one who is creating the context. Mm. And I think this is no different when it comes to music. Like, I now consciously use music to cultivate different energies in my space, depending on what state I want to be in or what I want to create in that moment. Do I want to create a context that invites me into my own healing? Well, okay, I might choose different binaural beats or different hertz frequencies that match the earth, or, you know, the miracle tone, as so many call it. This, I think it's 888 hertz. And so that is sort of fascinating to me, that we can choose the frequency and the hertz for different situations. And then I might choose something like electronic music if I'm really wanting to be really upbeat and creative and playful and just moving and grooving in my, you know, in my workspace. And there's probably a type of music that I would choose for, you know, infinite scenarios of wanting to cultivate a certain feeling state in my body, or really a certain frequency in my body. So it's been interesting to now consciously do that, but to also, along the journey of getting here, to notice which songs, which genres have I been most called to at certain times in my life. And I would say, absolutely across the board, there has been something in those songs or in those genres that was right for me at that moment. And it was inviting me into some self-exploration or some new feeling tone that I was ready to feel at that moment, whether it was my, you know, my punk rock phase in middle school, where I needed to connect with my sacred anger and learn how to express that healthily, or it was my EDM phase where I needed to get into ecstatic dance and experience movement in my body that I had never moved before, to create, you know, create the spaciousness for creation. It's like every genre has kind of played a role, and I've probably listened to it all at some point in this collection or this web of human experience that I've been traveling through. And music has absolutely been a guide.
Mm. So as it settled from that sort of eclectic mix, then as it settled down into a kind of, I won't say mainstream, but a more kind of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? A more prominent theme of music rather than, yeah, I've tried that to the left, I've tried that to the right, but I've kind of ended up in this middle of this particular genre. Has that kind of evolved?
It has. It definitely has. And it's funny because the genre feels like such a mirror to who I am right now. And so it might shift, but it's very much like lo-fi beats, kind of like island electronic beats. There's usually a strong female vocal that comes in at some point, but there's just this drum beat of kind of safety, security, depth. It's light, it's positive. I'm not doing like the really heavy dubstep, like so deep you want to like get down on the ground kind of thing. Like there are still moments for that. I still go to festivals. I do ecstatic dance quite regularly. So there's still moments, but yes, it has settled into something that feels like a reflection of the essence of who I am as this version of myself right now. And I'm so curious to ask you that same question. Is there, you know, are you finding that you're using variety or enjoying variety, or is there something that you've kind of settled into?
Yeah, I don't think I've shifted dramatically. I had a spell, last year I was introduced to, you know, quite diverse musical styles, tastes. And I actually enjoyed it. And I think that brings in a whole new, you know, we're influenced by the people that surround us most, because I was in young sort of company that were really stretching me. And I find myself kind of, you know, aligning with it. I loved it. But since that kind of inverted commas younger influence is no longer prevalent, I've kind of almost reverted back to my, you know, my kind of ballad genre, deep, meaningful, soulful music, you know, and one that I play daily, and I mean daily, if not three or four times each day, is the USA for Africa 94 record. I just absolutely love that. It reaches me. And I've been doing that for years, by the way, and it never, ever, ever loses its impact. You'd think by now I'd outgrow it, but no. So, yeah. You know, I listen to the words, you know, be present with, and the diversity of all these singers, you know, coming from different perspectives and different tonalities and, you know, this whole kind of eclectic mix of tones, vibrations. It's just, and more importantly, the message, the underlying message, you know. So that's been very... very prevalent in for a long, long time in my world now. But No, I stand to be, and maybe that's one of the things that, you know, on this kind of conventional thinking, Nicole, maybe that's one of the things you can help me with to start to stretch me again musically, because I feel like, you know, I've listened to your words there, and I, in a way that I didn't totally understand, that the curiosity is overwhelming to the point where, help me understand then.
Right. And it's, can we help each other understand through a language that isn't just the spoken word, right? That is instead something so holistic and so vibrationally experienced as music. And I think absolutely, like these songs, these albums, they carry a signature that we can receive. They carry a message that we can receive. And so, yeah, I too find that I'm influenced by people around me as well. And when I'm really kind of resonating with a person or spending a lot of time with them, inevitably at some point, whether you're in the car on a road trip or you know, in shared workspace or whatever it is, making a meal together and putting on music, you end up getting exposed to and moved by or influenced by their musical taste as well. Yeah. And isn't this just an expression of ourselves and our artistry? So to share that with another, I think is such a beautiful way to connect and to know one another on a nonverbal level and really at kind of a soul essence level. So yeah, so maybe we'll be sharing some playlists back and forth, Paul.
Well, you know, let's hold ourselves accountable to listeners and each other, and let's do that and come back maybe on another episode. Because I know when we spoke off air, Nicole, we said, oh yeah, you know, maybe there's mileage in doing 4 episodes. I think there's mileage in doing 4 million episodes.
Right.
you know, figuratively speaking. But yeah, I mean, let's do that, because I want to really dig, you know, Wayne Dyer said, didn't he, don't die with your music still inside of you. Now, there's something within me, just as you're kind of exploring all these, you know, different kind of boundaries, you know, and this journey into new paradigms, Nicole. Similarly, I feel that's where I am on the musical front. There is, you know, I do not and will not die with my music still inside me. What does that look like? What does that sound like? I haven't got a clue. But I invite you to hold my hand and take me, you know, to quote Ralph McTell, through the metaphoric streets of London, and help to show me something to help to change my mind.
Amazing. I'm in. I already have songs coming to mind. And yeah, and I think, interestingly enough, I think there are probably themes, or there could be themes that we might notice across each other's musical taste. Mm. And I think one of the key ones in mine, just as far as a lesson that I'm holding really dear to my heart, a lot of the lyrics that I listen to are about ushering in a new paradigm and birthing a new world and coming together as, you know, as community and stepping into a reality that's built more on love than greed and all these things. Like so much of what I share with the world through podcasting and writing and all of this, the lyrics that I'm listening to are also a match to that. And so it's, yeah, it'll just be interesting for us to experience one another through music and through lyrics, because I think you'll notice some parallels and some crossover.
So do you songwrite?
So interestingly enough, as a child, I did often. I had notebooks filled with poetry and songs that I would write, and tunes would sort of channel through me, and I would try to, you know, I could never write in music, like, you know, in musical literacy. That wasn't a skill that I had, but now it still does happen into my adult life. The more I connect with my creativity and the more I sort of welcome that and become more confident to allow sound to move through me. And that's probably a whole other topic, right? Like finding the power of one's voice, not being afraid to say something or sing something, and like letting go of worrying what people will think. There's been a whole behind the scenes process of that. But cut to current modern day, and here I am on hikes humming tunes that I feel like I'm channeling from the land. I don't even think they necessarily come from me. I think sometimes depending on where I am on this earth, different rhythms, different songs will come through. And I actually think it's coming from the place and all the people who have come before me and have shaped that place and still leave their energetic memories or their energetic signatures there. And I've had so many beautiful moments of, you know, singing songs, channeled songs on the cliffs of Ireland and amazing places where I'm like, I don't even think this is coming from me. Like, where is this coming from? I am just a vessel. I'm just giving myself over to something greater than me to be an instrument. And I am willing to be played as an instrument by the universe. And it's so, the more I let go, the more that this actually comes back. And I am writing songs again. And I just, you asking me that feels like a message to keep going.
Not being presumptuous, but maybe there's a co-creation, because this is something that's been bubbling within me for a long, long, long time. You know, like yourself, Nicole, I've wrote poetry, I've had poetry published, And interestingly, I've had a conversation just a few hours ago with a inverted commas stranger around this. And my poetry was quite polarized. It was either around the stark existence that was fueled by the demon drink, devastation, destruction, chaos that prevailed within my life for many, many years, or hope and love. Total polarization. So I had a lot of work published around that, but there's something at the risk of repeating that's coming back to the fore. And this feels really aligned energetically, really aligned to, you know, to maybe co-create something that I don't know, but I'm putting it out there because, as we know, when we put it out there, just be careful what you wish for, because it will unfold.
Exactly.
So on that musical note, Nicole, I mean, last few words to yourself, anything to, because we will reconvene on another episode, I think it's safe to say now, and we'll start around music, because there's something really, really profound about this for me, really profound. And but last words to you, Mom, last words to you.
Oh, I'm leaving this conversation the way I leave each one of our conversations, which is in gratitude, feeling moved by this conversation. I think my relationship to music will evolve because of this. And I appreciate the invitation to really look at this and to notice the ways that music is moving through me and the way that my own life is music in the ways that I, as a human being, as a creative being, in some ways I am music. You are music. Your life is a unique song that wants to come through. And so I look forward to witnessing your song and learning how to share mine as well. And yes, maybe even weaving a song together. So I'm just very grateful for the beauty of this conversation.
Elton John, he sang that song, didn't he? Your song. And on that musical note, before I go down another rabbit hole, I'm not going to burst out into song, because I think really that needs to be put on hold now till Nicole, and this is not being presumptuous, this is coming from intuition. Nicole and I co-create some lyrics and actually deliver those lyrics between us. Watch this space. And on that note, listeners, I'll sign off the way I always do, non-musically, by saying, remember, the world's changing. How will you respond?
Thanks very much for listening to this World Game Changers podcast episode. Hopefully you found it interesting and helpful. Drop a line to paul@worldgamechangers.org with any thoughts or questions you may have, and he'll be more than happy to respond. Remember, the world's changing. How will you respond?